This time on Watchers of Tomorrow, while Kirk is busy playing poker, the Enterprise gets towed!
Hello everybody, my name is Gep, and I'm joined as always by my good friend Dr. Izzix.
Hi!
And welcome back to Watchers of Tomorrow, the weekly sci-fi critique slash review slash watching old things we forgot show.
Yep. But today's episode I certainly didn't forget.
This episode I'd actually not seen. I kept hearing of it as one of the big names, but I'd never actually seen it before.
Yeah, it was... one of my earliest memories of Star Trek, honestly. In fact, when I was quite young, it kind of creeped me out.
Well, it does have some elements that kind of stick in the mind. This week, we are watching Star Trek Original Series episode The Corbomite Maneuver.
Yes, the maneuver.
So we can make more Eddie Izzard jokes. So I watched this twice. I watched this once before the weekend and then once just now to do my synopsis, and the first time I thought it was boring and silly and confusing and nothing actually happened.
And the second time
I thought it was silly and nothing actually happened, but there was actually an okay amount of character stuff.
Yay!
So it took two viewings, and you have to like not really pay attention to the rest of the plot, but there is some character stuff hidden in here. It's not done as well. But, you know, it's not done badly.
I'd say that as far as the general trend of the series, this is an improvement over some of the other attempts at character stuff they've kind of flopped with.
Yeah, though, interestingly, this was the first episode they ever filmed in main series production. They did the two pilots, or three-ish pilots, and then they did this for the first main series run. So this is actually the first one that they ever did outside of the two, three pilot episodes.
I guess it might explain why your hero is suddenly in a gold uniform.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long she was in there, but she shows up in the gold uniform like twice. Once here and once a couple episodes ago, so they're just kind of out of order.
Yeah.
So I guess they started on a high note and decided to not put it in until, like, what are we on, episode 10?
Something like that.
Quite a ways in. This episode was written by Jerry Scholl, who's just a sci-fi TV writer. He's done Star Trek episodes under a pen name. He's done Twilight Zone episodes under a pen name. He's done Outer Limits episodes under a pen name. Apparently, he's published about 20 sci-fi novels with varying success. I don't think anyone would have necessarily heard of offhand.
So, sort of those types of novels you find in the paperbacks in the used bookstore, eh?
Yeah, in the back of the used bookstore that's maybe holding up a shelf somewhere. That kind of used bookstore.
I hope my own writing ends up in that territory someday.
One day, children will find your book and go, I don't know, this cover's confusing and it's only 10 cents.
So I guess I'll pick it up and figure out what the mystery is all about?
Yes. We are guest starring Anthony Call as Lieutenant Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
Kept accidentally writing Lieutenant Bayleaf. We'll see if I mess up.
You know, I was tempted to write Bailey's a few times, you know, but then I'd start making old Greg jokes, and we don't want that right now.
Clint Howard as Belloc. Clint Howard, actually the younger brother of Ron Howard, got his acting start guest appearing on a few episodes of The Andy Griffith Show because his older brother was, you know, starring on that show.
Yeah.
So there's yet another Andy Griffith connection here.
Coincidence? I think not.
We're now pretty sure they're in the same universe.
So, you know, clearly this is, you know, Belloc was in the Andy Griffith Show, and he's now in Star Trek, so yes. He used a different name in the Andy Griffith Show.
Belloc is actually, I'm going to keep calling him Belloc, because that's the bad guy from Indiana Jones.
Belloc.
Is actually voiced by two different voiceover actors. There is Ted Cassidy, who we have seen before as Rook, and audiences will know as Lurch from the Addams Family.
Mm-hmm.
Also voiced by Walker Edinson, who doesn't have a Wikipedia page, as far as I could find. So
apparently he's shown up in things like Gem?
Gem, the cartoon series?
I don't know. I'm gonna check this here.
The teenage girls in the rock
band.
Yeah,
Gem and the Holograms. He's showing up in Gem and the Holograms as Harvey Gabor and a bunch of other voices.
I've not actually seen that, but I love the idea that we are now connected we've connected Star Trek to the Andy Griffith universe and perhaps even the Jim and the Holograms universe.
Exactly. Which, you know, has its own, dramatic continuity in the, internet producer peoples as well. So we're going to the next level, guys.
Now that's all the guest stars. We got a couple of series regulars in the background who keep showing up in the credits, and I have to look up their faces because they never have lines. But yeah. You know, that's it for supporting cast at any rate. Well, without further ado, the synopsis. The Enterprise is very dramatically photographing stars.
Yes.
Spock yells, "Ready to photograph," and they do like a dramatic zoom in and out with an overhead camera to the guy pushing the button.
I actually rather like this, this overdramatic, camera stuff here. Just so like, okay, there's no real point for it because there's not a lot of tension yet, but cool.
Yeah, like we are taking a picture, zoom.
Pictures.
Lieutenant Bailey, who's the one taking the pictures, complains that they're doing star charts.
This should be easy work. Why are you upset?
He thinks that they've been at it for too long, I guess. Spock shuts him down a little. Sulu detects something approaching the ship, and despite evasive maneuvers and deflector shields up and all kinds of thingies, the object still approaches until it stops right in front of the ship, blocking their way.
Oh my.
It is a Rubik's Cube.
The menacing cube!
It spins in space, spinny, in front of the ship, spinning.
Yep.
There's more spinning. We've hit spinning again.
Yep, it's just going around. It's kind of glowing, too.
Yeah, it's a glowy, spinny cube. So yeah, they try to move around it, but it continues to block their path. Bailey yells, "It's blocking me," and Spock tells him to shut up.
It's like, you don't have to yell, man. Come on.
Captain's log, while making star maps, a cubical object has blocked their path.
I'm going to have to insert a quick aside here. Whenever cubes come up, just in general, I sometimes have to say the line, "What is this, some sort of cube?" Which is a reference to a Simpsons episode where the line was, "What is this, some sort of tube?"
It could be a tube cube. We don't know what's in this cube. Neither do they.
It's a mystery Rubik's Cube of Death. Perhaps,
yes.
Maybe.
Who among us has not been threatened by a Rubik's Cube?
I'd be surprised if anyone hasn't, so.
I'm pretty sure they weren't invented when this episode came up. They were like a 70s thing.
Maybe this inspired the Rubik's Cube.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
We need a puzzle that will confuse people for generations to come. I know. Some sort of cube.
In sick bay, the captain is having a physical with the good old wall treadmill thingy we saw in Charlie X. McCoy sees that there's an alert going on, but chooses to not tell the captain that there's an alert happening so he can finish his physical.
McCoy, are you like breaking regulations here? Come on.
Probably. When Kirk gets up, Spock shows him a cube. Says there's a cube.
Cube is stalking us, man. Come up here.
Kirk complains that McCoy didn't tell him about the alert. McCoy gives us our first, "I'm not a doctor, but." I'm a doctor, not a shuttle conductor. This, okay. I don't know what that has to do with, like, the blinky lights, but fine.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe, I don't know, like, train signals? Like, should be paying attention when this happens here or there?
Maybe. I mean, it's not a good start on the "I'm a doctor, not a..." Spock keeps telling Bailey how to do his job, because Bailey is useless.
Dang it, Bailey.
Bailey says that he wasn't scared before, he's just a human with a thing called an adrenaline gland, and Spock asks if it can be removed.
technically?
I do like Spock in this episode.
Yes. He's kind of snarking it up to a certain degree.
The department heads all give their reports on the cube. They don't know anything.
Yep. It's fair. All our scans are like, well, we can kind of figure out how big it is, but it's not really giving us much more info than that. It's kind of heavy. shrug.
Bailey wants to blow it up, and the captain says that he will take that under advisement if this ever becomes a democracy.
Yep.
Captain's log, they've been held by the cube for 18 hours, and they still don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's also mentioned there's, like, no plants nearby, so it's
yes.
Like, where did it come from?
No habitable planets that they know of, but as they said before, they're doing the star charts, and then they check the star charts for habitable planets, so I assume they're the star charts they just did a minute ago.
It's like, well, there's a lot of unknown around us right now. I'm not sure what to make of that. Well, that's why we're here, right?
Spock says that there are probably only two possibilities. Either it is some sort of space buoy, or it is flypaper.
Let's hope it's a buoy.
Giant space flies.
well, I've heard about giant space parrots, but this is ridiculous.
Bailey starts to just order them to fire phasers. Kirk goes, like, stop that. I give the orders, and he's pretty miffed someone, like, is giving orders.
Bailey, this is the kind of stuff that, like, gets you taken off the bridge and never allowed back.
Yeah. Oh, Kirk orders that they try to spiral away from it. I'm going to chart a spiral path away from the cube.
So sort of like go off to the side and sort of rotate around. I'm not sure what quite that means exactly.
I don't know. They're just going to try to get away from the cube. But the cube matches their every move and also begins to emit deadly, deadly radiation.
Oh no, the deadly radiation. It's getting in my hair.
When they can't run from the cube, Kirk then decides to blow it up. But Bailey doesn't hit the button. Like, Bailey was so excited about blowing it up a minute ago, and then it's like, hey, blow it up, Bailey. And Bailey's like, what?
Oh, I'm too freaked out, man. Game over, game over.
Captain's log, we've destroyed the cube, but should we keep going past the cube?
Dead, so it's not coming back, right? Then again, who may have sent this thing? They're this powerful to radiate us and match our every move and be a menace and potentially kill us all. Maybe it'll be a bad idea to go forward.
Spock says that if they continue going logically, they'll find whoever it was that sent the cube in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk says that it is their mission to seek out new life and new civilizations and do all that boldly going that's in the title sequence.
Yep, so let's boldly go.
Spock comments that there is a certain inefficiency of talking things over with him when the captain has already made up his mind.
I like what Kirk says to that. It's all about emotional security.
There is some good character stuff hidden in here. I do like the Spock stuff.
Yeah, I think this really kind of ups the relationship dynamics between Kirk and Spock a great deal, which I think would have been much useful earlier in the running of the series.
Yes.
Because, to sort of establish that for the audience.
Especially also since they haven't yet gotten to McCoy's being weirdly racist to Spock the entire time yet.
In fact, I don't think this part of the episode, they've either of them have interacted with each other.
Yeah, not very much. I think they may have passed a nod or something.
Yeah.
Kirk is upset that it took them so long to actually shoot the phasers and escape, and the engineering's not doing well, so he orders a bunch of drills until the crew is actually able to do their jobs, which good luck.
Like, you guys are terrible. Stop being terrible. Like, practice. Go now. Do it.
McCoy thinks that this is a bad idea because the crew, just went through a harrowing experience with radiation. Maybe now is not the best time to start doing a bunch of intense drills.
Radiation might imply that they got, I don't know, cell damage. That maybe it's a good idea to check everyone out just to make sure they're healthy.
Yeah, and he's also especially worried that Bailey may have been promoted to the bridge too soon and can't handle it and is already getting a bit fatigued and having trouble. Yeah, he's failed to do what you told him three times so far.
Yeah, I don't think he's ready for this bridge stuff here, guy, but Kirk's like, oh no, he's covering my claim. It's like, oh, McCoy's just reading textbooks, so yeah, and stuff. And Kirk, come on.
In the captain's quarters, they start to drink and they discuss how Kirk is still pushing the crew too hard. And that Spock reports that their exercise rating was 94%. I don't know what that means, but fine. And Kirk wants it to 100% to do it again.
So you have to get to at least 100% before you can give 110%. So,
oh, yeah. And you have to give 110%. Leave it all on the field. Want it more than the other team.
Yeah, 100% is bad, but 94, wow, that's just ridiculous. Come on.
McCoy asks what Kirk is going to do with that extra 6% when he gets it. Kirk says, I'm going to take that extra 6%, and I'm going to, and then Yeoman Rand comes in, and he stops talking. What sex joke was Kirk going to say about the number 6? This is the only reason he would stop dead in the middle of a sentence when Yeoman Rand walks in.
Maybe he knows about the Centauri from Babylon 5. This is actually a sex joke to them. I can explain another time. Don't worry.
Okay. No, they're just, I don't know. Maybe Babylon 5 got it from here.
I think it's more of a physiology joke in their case. But anyway. So rad.
Kirk expresses displeasure about having been assigned a female yeoman. That's all, really. Rand enters, gives him food. Kirk goes, they made me work next to a woman. How dare they?
Kirk, you're kind of an ass.
Yep.
As I said, before we started recording, this is an episode that I generally like. Has less terrible elements that some of the other episodes have, but there's still a couple.
But I feel like it only has less terrible elements because this is the only time that Rand shows up in the entire episode. One more time when she brings someone coffee, but that's it. No one even talks to her, though. The bridge has detected another object coming towards them.
Who knows?
What could it
be? That's all you gotta say.
it's a sphere. Oh my god. First it was a cube, now there's a sphere.
Are we gonna get a pyramid next?
Or maybe. I was watching this with my girlfriend, and they're like, another object is coming towards us. Is it a sphere? It's a sphere, isn't it? And it's like, yep, it's a sphere.
It's like, well, I guess these aliens know how to play the know your shapes game, but...
Also, okay, so from a design perspective, a sphere is objectively a less menacing shape than a cube.
Yeah, it's less pointy bits.
Yeah, there's fewer corners, people find it more comfortable and less off-putting, so... They're kind of downgrading the menace factor as they go on.
At least as far as the shape goes. But there is another problem with this thing. It's kind of huge.
That's
large.
It's like a mile in diameter.
You know, it just keeps getting closer and closer and is, you know, dramatically it, yeah, it just keeps getting bigger compared to the Enterprise. It's, you know, you're watching this on a 2D screen, so it's like, oh, perspective. Oh, yeah.
Yes. The sphere puts the Enterprise in a tractor beam. They keep commenting on how big it is, and Bailey once again fails to do even the most basic part of his job.
Bailey, that's right. You're either going to get knocked down to lieutenant, or wait, you're already a lieutenant.
The sphere contacts them as Commander Baylock of the flagship Farius.
Farius.
They're going to destroy the Enterprise because they destroyed the cube thing. And they have... Oh. 10 Earth minutes to make peace with their various gods.
Yes, Earth minutes and various gods.
And again, Bailey's fails to do his job. This is like the fifth time now. I'm just going to keep mentioning it. He just sits there. Sulu has to keep reaching over and pushing buttons for him.
Bailey, are you going to, like, do anything? Or we just need to, like, have Sulu take over your position here? Come on.
Kirk goes to the intercom and says that, you know, the crew just heard that. But the only danger that is facing them is themselves and the fear of the unknown. Because there's no such thing as the unknown. There's just things we don't yet know. And he's sure that this guy who just threatened to blow up the ship for very little reason is completely reasonable and totally won't blow them up later if we just talk to him for a minute.
So, Kirk, you got some really idealistic things going on here, which I guess, you know, good on you. But still, this guy has basically just told you you're going to die in a few minutes.
Yeah. Also, like, so this massive megaship that, like, just pretty much easily could destroy you anytime it wanted shows up, and you're like... We have nothing to fear but fear. It's like that megaship. It's like 40 times bigger than the Enterprise.
Kirk, this thing's basically covered in light bulbs and is going, I'm going to murder you and you have no power. And you're like, oh, I'm just going to talk it to death. Well, I guess Kirk does have that ability to do that sometimes. He did it with an android already, right?
That's true. He did talk an android to death.
But I'm not quite sure that just works on any whole thing here. Unless these are secretly, you know, some sort of, you know, robotic or... You know, cybernetic life forms inside that giant spheroid.
They may be.
But we don't know. Anyway.
When they try to leave as a show of good faith, they're like, hey, we didn't know you were here. I'm going to back up now. See, take it easy, man. Take it easy.
Yeah, well, we don't mean any harm. It's our bad. You know, we could apologize, but we're just going to go now. Is that cool, man?
But the big sphere ship has them trapped in the tractor beam, energy drainy beam, whatever it is. They just can't move.
Yeah, the beam of nope.
Zok finds a way to get a visual on Commander Baylock. A blue alien appears on screen, looks sort of puppety, and they all look really upset about it. It's got a wavy screen, so you sort of can't see it well, but it still looks really fake, and they all like, oh god, alien.
It's a weird creature. Oh my, it's talking to us. You know, it has 60s vision on its monitor screen here.
Yes, it's an old 70s music video.
You know, suddenly, you know, Janis Joplin starts singing, and we all get pretty groovy.
Bailey is yelling in a weird way. Like, he just gets up and says, Spock's wasting time. Sulu keeps telling us how long we have to die. We're all gonna die. Oh my god.
Oh my god. Game over, man. Game over.
Bailey is then ordered to his quarters for, you know, being weird, and he's dragged off the bridge.
Get out of here, Bailey. You've finally crossed the line. You've asked me, you know, the question, don't you know that when you're dying? That's too far.
Well, he has failed to do his job a total of like 6 times so far. So Probably not the best person to have on the bridge during an emergency at any rate.
Nope.
Kirk continues to try to explain himself to Baylock, but Baylock is having none of it. He's like, no, shut up. You have 4 minutes left to live. Zulu keeps reporting on how long they got left to live. Scotty is annoyed. Kirk is pacing around frustrated. Everyone's having a bad old time.
So Scotty like complains about to Sulu about his obsession with timepieces. Because, you know, Sulu's just like, 4 minutes, 30 seconds. And it's like, okay, cool. Space is on a little bit more.
Kirk is saying that he's got nothing to do and he's really frustrated. And Spock says that they've been checkmated and like in chess, the game must be over.
So we're screwed then. Great.
Yep.
We're just going to sit here and die? That's all you got, man? Come on, Spock.
McCoy comes in all upset and says that Kirk pushed the crew too hard and that he's going to report Bailey as having like a mental breakdown because of overstress and that it'll reflect badly on the captain's decision making. And that's no bluff.
Interesting choice of words, McCoy.
Kirk gets mad and then shuts up when the crew's looking at him. And then he's like, oh, I have an idea.
What if we're not playing chess? Uh-huh. What if we're playing poker?
Yes. Kirk asks if Spock has ever played poker. Apparently not.
What is this poker you speak of? Hmm.
Kirk hails Baylock and tells him that all of the ships in the Federation, or Earth ships, or whatever this is, I don't know, have had this thing installed called Corbomite. That's this magic material device thing that will just destroy any ship that attacks them.
Mm-hmm. It's a full energy reflection device of some sort.
Yeah, like, the Enterprise will be destroyed, but any ship that tries to destroy the Enterprise will also be destroyed. We got some mutually assured destruction happening here.
You better not, otherwise we're all gonna die, and I don't think either one of us wants that.
The crew waits in apprehension, as they only have 1 minute left. Bailey returns to, like, sit down and die valiantly in his post, I guess. Redemption
I'm
or
back.
Something.
I'm sorry. We're all going to die in a moment, so it doesn't really matter. I want to be here.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you screw up, Bailey. Everyone just kind of sombers around for a little while. But then the deadline passes with nobody being blown up.
Oh, well, that works. I guess we're going to live.
Baylock says that he will spare them as long as he can have proof of this Corbomite. Kirk says no.
Why?
And Baylock says, I will show you another demonstration of my power. And then a tiny little shuttle comes out of the ship. Great demonstration of your power there.
Quite adorable, actually. It's like because the big spheroid ship is like covered in light bulbs there. And this one's like just like four of the light bulbs kind of attached together. And it's just tiny. It's so cute.
Yeah, a few light bulbs come off. Baylock says that they were no longer going to be killed, but instead he's going to take them to a habitable planet where the crew will be dropped off and marooned, and then the ship's going to be destroyed and they'll be left there.
Sweet, we get our own pleasure planet.
Apparently none of them are into it. Captain's log, the Enterprise is in tow, and Kirk for some reason assumes that that must be putting a strain on Baylock's ship. And he's waiting for him to make a mistake.
Yes.
I don't get, like, everything you've seen so far is that this ship is, like, massively superior.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, but this must be putting a strain on his ship. Yes.
Well, I guess it's because it's smaller than the Enterprise, this little tug ship
is. I suppose, but you don't know, like, I guess size is all that matters in ships.
I guess, you know. Never mind that there are, you know, other power sources other than whatever the Enterprise is using, which is not defined at this point, I think. So, you know.
But Baylock apparently does make a mistake. He pulls his ship ahead slightly, and Kirk gives the order to go full speed ahead at a right angle and break away from the tractor beam. They kind of overheat a little bit. There's some shaking. People run back and forth in the hallway like they're, you know, being tilted. Very slightly, and there's 5 minutes of really slow, dramatic music.
Announcing of temperature is 8,000 degrees. The camera angle goes all, you know, to the side there, and it's tilting, and yeah, and slowly, after some beeping sounds, you start to pull away.
Yes, this is easily the least riveting escape thingy ever. Ever.
It's like, well, at least they're kind of trying, but like it's not really working here.
But this apparently has damaged Baylock's ship.
I know. I guess Kirk was right, even though he had no reason to know he was right.
It's sending out a distress signal, but it's too weak for the main ship to have probably picked up, so Kirk decides that they need to go help because they care about life and things.
All life is sacred. Hey, with these guys, because they were despite them being jerks. Let's go help.
They beam aboard with McCoy to treat any injuries, and Bailey so that he can see the face of the unknown.
You're freaking out about the unknown, so I guess we should show it off to you so you're less freaked out next time.
But was he freaking out about the unknown? Wasn't he freaking out about the we're definitely going to die?
Yeah, I think that's why we was actually freaking out. So, Kirk, you need to be better about interacting with this Bailey character. You seem to be making all these mistakes with him.
Well, he's got time for one more. Once aboard the alien ship, they see that Belloc, who they've been talking to on the view screen, is a puppet, which I guess we weren't supposed to think it looked like a puppet before. I don't know.
No one could anticipate that the puppet looking guy was actually a puppet. Oh,
no. They are greeted by a small child who has been dubbed over with an adult voice to make him kind of creepy, who introduces himself as Commander Belloc.
Oh, hello, Belloc. You seem to be some sort of shorty.
He offers them drinks and says that this was all a test to see what the Enterprise's real intentions were.
Yes.
He says that he's all alone and he runs the entire complex and ship from this one little command room, but he's very lonely because of this. It's like no backstory for this. I don't know why. Why is he all alone on this thing?
I don't know. Maybe this First Federation is only like him.
Yeah, maybe I guess. Yeah. Or he's an outcast or the rest of the species died. We don't know.
Or maybe there's like a dozen of them and they all kind of patrol a certain area of space and it's all really kind of boring because they have to like keep an eye on their territory and they go and hang out and, you know, and meet up for parties and things. They got to be neglecting their duties.
Like Green Lanterns?
I guess so.
He immediately asks for one of the crew to stay with him and talk. Like nothing, just like, hey, I know that I like tricked you guys and tried to blow up your ship or threatened to blow up your ship and tractor beamed you, but I'm lonely. Would it be okay if like I talked to one of your crewmates for a while, unspecified amount of time?
Potentially forever, because you don't know when you're going to be coming back.
Bailey says that he would very much like to stay. Belloc asks if this represents Earth's best, and they go, no.
Nope.
No.
In fact, he didn't have to really leave him for his duties earlier, so he's kind of crap, honestly.
Yeah, Kirk even says, like, well, I'll get a better officer out of it in the end.
Hopefully. Well, I guess either Bailey will improve and he'll become a better officer, or he'll get replaced.
Yeah, I think it's the second.
The better officer.
Well, that gives them a tour of his ship. That is all.
The end. So, yeah, that was the Corbinite maneuver.
Yes. Less of a maneuver than an idiot.
It's more of a technique.
Yeah, it's technically it's a really bad bluff that should not have worked and probably wouldn't have worked if this guy was not just testing them to see what would happen.
So because they're kind of both bluffing to a certain degree, that you know, it kind of just works. So it's like, well, I don't think this is a thing this little tiny Enterprise ship has, but I don't know. Maybe they're trying to pull something. I guess I should be paying attention to what they're doing.
Yeah, they're both bluffing. I was getting some, like, you know, I said it before in the thing, like, there's some mutually assured destruction Cold War kind of vibes coming off of this. We don't know what they know. We, like, kind of were able to spy on them and see what they looked like, but they don't know what we know. And they even have a thing of, like, why is this Corbomite not mentioned in any of your records? Like, well, because we kept it secret. Yeah.
It's like, why would we put our biggest, you know, secret in all of our records? Come on, guy. Yeah, don't you think about these things, dude?
Yeah, so there's this whole, like, do they know what we know that they know that we know thing happening. It's very under plot. It's very subplotty, but, you know, it's kind of this underwriting theme of the thing of just, you know, we don't know what this is, but we're trying to be diplomatic, but also threatening, and we have to keep bluffing each other. And then I guess the whole thing at the end is kind of this, like, well, maybe if we all talked to each other, we would find out that our enemy is actually a small child.
And maybe we don't have anything to really fear here.
Yes, because the only thing to fear is the unknown.
Yes.
That apparently is the theme they thought this episode was conveying.
A little bit, I guess. Kind of. It's more of the unknown of the intentions, the wants and desires of others, as opposed to, well, there's space out there. There might be monsters out there.
Though the thing with this is still, like, the crew in these always has very little to do with the success of anything they're actually doing.
Kind of, yeah.
Because kind of, if Belloc had not just been testing them to see what their reactions were, they would have been screwed.
Yeah. Like, I got this giant ship. It can, you know, disable your ship however I like. So yeah, if I actually want to be murdering you, I'm just going to do it.
So yeah, I kind of get the thing. Kirk makes a speech about how, like, any sufficiently advanced culture will probably be, like, smart enough and interested enough in things to discuss it over with us and not just blow us up arbitrarily.
Yeah, hopefully at least.
But you still have this kind of, they got lucky.
You guys seem to be not very good at your jobs, but you're very lucky, so congrats.
Which is actually fine as a message to me. Like, there's a lot of life that is you got lucky, and we just try to, like, not acknowledge that, but... there's a lot of things that do happen that way, but the way the show always frames it is just like, oh, look how great they were at doing things.
Well, I guess self-congratulation is, I don't know, it just sort of gets old after a while. But speaking of things that get lucky in a Cold War sense, I think this might be a good opportunity to mention sort of something along those lines.
Yes.
Yeah, so... So I'm maybe not rendering all the details totally correct here, but at one point during the, I think it was the late 80s or something like that, maybe mid-80s, I don't remember exactly, there are scientists who study the auroras and things like that, and one of the things they do to do that is to actually send up rockets. So these are small rockets with sensor payloads that they can either transmit down to Earth or, fall out of the sky because they don't actually go up anything except near very close to Earth space, and they can be recovered. One day, some scientists were firing off one of these rockets in, I think, northern Norway, and the Russians, unaware that this was going to be happening, totally freaked out. And they were like, well, we're going to be, this might be the first strike here, guys. We need to, like, make a decision now. And thankfully, they decided, no, we're not going to fire all our missiles because it only seems to be one rocket here. Okay, it's not coming at us. Okay, good. And it sort of comes down to that thing about, not knowing what the other side's intentions are. Not knowing enough about what's going on to make an accurate assessment, which might make you jump the gun and try to do something foolish. Yeah, that'd be sort of this episode kind of reminded me of that incident.
Yeah, well, I did think that the kind of mutually assured destruction bit is kind of that sort of thing, like, even if this had been true with them bluffing about the Corbomite stuff, it would still be a kind of, we don't want them to blow us up because then we'll have to blow them up and everyone's dead. That doesn't work out well for anybody.
Indeed.
But kind of the thing is, if mutually assured destruction is your only deterrent, you only have like two choices, which is either we destroy them or not.
And, one decision... It's also basically suicide, so kind of only one decision at the end.
Yeah.
Which I guess is how we kind of survived the 20th century and, well, so far the 21st century.
That's generally been the idea. I mean, I guess it worked out well enough. I'm certainly not politically schooled enough to comment on the good or ills of that as a military strategy.
It has its risks, because... again, going back to my rocket example, one mistake where there's a miscommunication could potentially lead to ultimate destruction. Because if you discover rightly or wrongly that that there's what seems to be an attack coming at you, you don't necessarily have a choice what to do there, other than lay there and die, or at least try to take them down with you. And if that attack ends up not being actually an attack, well, then everyone just kind of dies because, there was a miscommunication. That's also bad.
Yeah, it's kind of high risk, moderately low chance of reward.
Yes. And so that's why the Cold War, a lot of the stuff ended up, being fought out in, like, proxy wars and things like that. So kind of sucked it for everybody else.
We should probably also talk about the, like, thing they wanted to be the theme of the episode. There's this, like, the only thing to fear is fear itself idea, which I find kind of silly. Generally,
I think to a certain degree that one episode of Voyager with the brain space, with the fear itself actually showing up, was maybe a better way to address it.
Yeah, a little bit, because this is I understand what they're going for, and I used to hear this all the time in kind of nature conservation stuff, because they had this whole thing with, like, people are afraid of bats and scorpions and things that aren't really that dangerous to you. And if you just learn a little bit about them, maybe you won't be afraid of them anymore. And, that works fine. As long as the thing you're learning about is not actually dangerous to you.
Yes.
You know, if I didn't know that I had a gas leak in my house and I was like, I'm worried what that smell is and I'm afraid of it, and then I go like, oh, it's a gas leak, nothing to be afraid of, now I know what it is.
Hooray, I am now enlightened and I don't have to do anything more.
The boom! Enlightened might be lightheaded, but you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a fine sentiment, but it only really works if the thing is not dangerous in itself.
Agreed.
So overall, it's kind of a little oversimplified for my liking, especially with how much it's trotted out as a life philosophy.
Being able to confront the unknown and not just totally freak out, that's a good first step, but it's not the only step you should be taking here.
It kind of gets into this thing that bugs me of like, fear as a, you know, bad thing no one should ever have.
Oh, yeah,
it's a very healthy, normal response to a lot of situations, and you probably shouldn't be trying to get rid of it.
There's a guy coming at me with an axe. I should maybe be afraid of this and take actions accordingly so I can get myself out of trouble. Maybe I could use that adrenaline gland that Mr. Spock wants to have me remove to, I don't know, make myself run faster than I would normally be able to do. Because I'm now full of like all the chemicals and things like that, and my pain sensors are reduced because my brain has told my body's like, hey, if we don't do this thing, we are going to cease to be, so we're going to get the heck out of here.
Even the adrenaline gland thing, like I appreciated the joke, especially since in later episodes they do establish Spock more as the unemotional one. This episode didn't exactly have that, but
yes.
Using Bailey as this stand-in for emotions are bad. Again,
mm-hmm.
we keep hitting emotions are bad. This one didn't even have the flip side thing. This one was just emotions are bad.
Yeah, guys, come on. Emotions are bad, so don't feel them. Come on. It's going to make you freak out and you're getting kicked off the bridge, even though you shouldn't have been there in the first place. And yeah.
At least it's a little more consistent. Emotions are bad. Ideals are good.
Yeah, which I guess is maybe a weird dichotomy, but I'll at least take the ideals as a good side of it.
Yeah, they did have that of like, we should, you know, go help people even if they were mm-hmm. trying to kill us, because we say we care about people and life.
Yeah, my own view is that, yeah, it's okay to feel emotions. You can even like be really upset with people, but you know, if you got your principles and they've been well crafted and they're generally good here, then yeah, sometimes it means you're going to be helping people you don't much care for. And yeah, it might sting and hurt and things like that, and they might not even appreciate it. But but it is sort of still being self-consistent as far as a moral philosophy goes, which is which is workable.
Though it still bugs me, they never really said it explicitly. But if the fear is bad, emotions are bad, control yourself, go only with your ideals. An ideal that is based so much in empathy should be emotional.
Yes.
Like you're trying to help people because you care about life and empathize with it and want to like not have other life forms suffer and die needlessly.
We'd feel bad about death, so mate, we're not supposed to feel anymore. Oh god.
Yeah, and like arguably this one is even this guy's way better at the whole test thing than I've seen in some other things, because like nobody died, nobody got hurt, they like barely damaged the ship. So he was pretty good at his little stupid test thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really understand the whole I need to know your true intentions idea. It's like you just go up in your super ship that can basically take out anything else in the galaxy that we've seen. They're like, hey, are you friendly? Because, you know, I can blow you up.
Yeah, because it's sort of a case where, like, why are you going to feel threatened by the Enterprise if you could just sort of toss it around however you like?
Yeah, unless they're going for kind of I can only share knowledge with people of good Christian morals or whatever.
In which case, we needed to restructure the episode quite a bit here, so.
Yeah, like, that's part of the thing. They've got some good character stuff going, but everything else doesn't make any sense and kind of, at least it doesn't take away from it this time. They did kind of have the, you know, we need to, like, be good, better at our jobs a little bit, which is, I feel, a theme some of the other episodes could have used.
Maybe that's why they put this order here. It's like, well, maybe we've gotten better at our jobs now. Not fully there, but we're getting there.
Yeah, you can't start with the episode about how we need to be good at our jobs and then have 5 episodes about not being good at your job.
Oh, no, we just kind of suck at this. Maybe we should go home to Earth.
They never exactly addressed the thing with Kirk exhausting the crew. I guess Bailey coming back and being sort of okay at the end is supposed to justify him wanting to push them really hard.
Yes.
Like, I think the Doctor kind of smiles when Bailey comes back, but overall it's kind of left hanging and never addressed. Of like, hey, you're pushing the crew too hard and it's not going to be good. Well, I'm going to say a sex joke and then get interrupted by my yeoman and then say some sexist things and then talk about how the Enterprise is my woman and then we're going to move on and forget about it.
To be honest, if some of the sexism, you know, cut that, of course, you know, actually cut all of it. And if you want to have this sort of, you know, interlude with pushing the crew, then I don't know, cut the dramatic tension building stuff like maybe 30% and have sort of a finisher at the end. It's like, okay, we've hung out with Belloc here, our Belloc, and Bailey's off, and I'm going to have a brief 2-minute scene on the bridge with Kirk, sort of like, you guys are pretty good, I care about you, etc. I may have been pushing you the last day or so more than you're used to, but you guys managed to hold up, and I'm proud of you. Like, sort of try to do that whole Captain Dad thing or something like that. Yeah. To be kind of fitting.
They could have done sort of a like, oh, you have a giant space complex. My crew's been working super hard. Can we have some shore leave?
Oh, that would have been brilliant. Yes. Let's go with that option.
Yeah, they just have, instead of him being on his super tiny ship, you go on and he's like, oh, we called the ship back and here's a massive garden that I live in the middle of this mile-long spaceship. And, you know, the crew can come relax because I put you guys through a stupid test.
It's like, yeah, this is my way to apologize.
Now we're all going to learn about each other and have grapefruit juice.
Yes. That's the Chanya.
Yes, Chanya.
Personal story here. When I was in grad school, learning about the sciences and things like that, I had a roommate named Victor. And a few times he had a Star Trek themed party where we would watch a couple episodes of Star Trek. I think most of them were TNG, but I think there was like maybe at least a couple of regional series. And he created various drinks inspired by Star Trek. Don't drink alcohol generally, but I did try the prune juice. For Worf's favorite drink in the DS9 era, at least. I hear that the blood wine was chunky. he actually managed to get a Chateau Picard wine, like actually from France. Apparently a bit of an adventure as far as the shipping was concerned. But he also made up some various drinks, including Tranya, which is apparently like vodka and orange juice.
Well, I guess that's close because apparently they used grapefruit juice on set. I mean, that's just a screwdriver.
Yeah, I'd like add some random spices or something like that to it too. It was all sort of like kind of weird mixed drinks that don't quite follow the norms, but it's like, well, it's outer space. Expect something weird.
Yes. Aliens don't have the same taste buds as you, so you're not going to enjoy this.
But good luck and have fun. You at least can get drunk, right?
Yes.
Maybe it was Everclear.
I hope not.
But anyway, that was my roommate Victor. He changed schools, and I don't know where he's up to these days.
Well, if he ever hears this, we'd love some Star Trek drink themed recipe cards.
All right. Maybe I should send him this episode when it comes out.
Yeah, we can put it up on the website.
So where were we?
We were at a tower that could have ended better because he didn't talk about. Yeah. Pushing his crew too hard at all. And I guess the Doctor became fine with the pushing your crew too hard aspect.
Like at one point McCoy comes in, he's like, just like, I'm sorry, I'm, you know, all this and everything's gonna be good, right? And he's like, well, like I guess. Aren't you just like bothering Kirk about like, I'm going to put you under board, it's gonna be bad if we survive this? Kirk's like, really? We're about to die, come on.
Yeah. But like, so they have the stress of this thing, he's putting them through constant drills. I don't know. I feel like they could have addressed a little something because you have this idea of like, we just came off of a weird unknown life and death situation. I want you to go through constant drills for a bit. And then we're going to go right back to where it was in the anticipation of finding whoever it was that put us in the life and death situation. Like, I don't think it was a good time to be running drills.
Yeah, let's maybe take a break here and get a breather here. Need to, we'll run away if something comes at us.
I just think it kind of goes to the Kirk model of captaining that we've seen so far, of just push, things go wrong, it's all your fault, I'm perfect captain man.
What do you mean you're going about to break here? You're about to freak out and all this. That's impossible. I'm Captain Kirk, damn it. I'm going to push you as hard as I like, and you're going to give me that 112% now.
You're not afraid of anything, because it's just the unknown, and you don't know the unknown, so you can't be afraid of the unknown. Haha, I've logicked at you.
So it's starting to become apparent that Kirk's maybe a little detached from reality.
Yeah. Though I don't know, I feel like the themes in this were at least a little more concise, but it leaves us with less rambling to go on.
Yeah, true, true. You know, less things to sort of like go on a half hour sort of, really, guys? Yeah, so should I get to my awards then?
Yes, awards.
All right, so first up, I got Menacing Geometry for spheres and cubes.
Oh,
oh God.
That might show up again later.
Yes. Next one is First Contact. Is this like the first like real First Contact situation we got in the show, I think?
I think, yeah, real proper humanoid talking alien.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, we got the giant floating head in that one episode, but that's sort of like, they're here, and then they just kind of like take the guy, you know, Charlie, and run off. So
we had the giant talking head, we had the technically alien children.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was all. We had a little dog.
And we also got the salt monster, but that was more of a, well, it's less, it's kind, now it's dead.
Yeah.
So not really contacting a full civilization, more finishing it off. There we go. So my third award for today is Promotion of Incompetence, because Bailey shouldn't have been there.
No, he should not have been there at all. I guess he's not anymore. He existed to pawn off on the alien, and he did that. So, you know, I guess fine.
We need a guest star that we don't mind if he vanishes forever. I also got a fourth award, Appropriate Architect, for Balok's ship. When they get in the transporter room, Scotty's like, yeah, you might want to like crouch down. It's kind of tight quarters, and they beam over, and the, you know, the ceiling's like super low for them, at least where they beam into. And the general architecture of the place is all curtains and archways, and generally kind of short because, well, the guy who's running the ship is actually kind of short, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it actually makes sense for once.
Yeah.
It's not human designed.
Exactly. And I love it when there's like details in sci-fi that like that. It's like, yes, this is. You know, this situation is different than what humans would like put together, so it's going to look different appropriately.
And I guess it is sort of futuristic because it's definitely kind of 70s.
Mm-hmm. Which is always futuristic.
Yes, especially when it's made in the 60s.
Yep. So yeah, that's my awards. Not a lot to talk about them other than, you know, we already said.
Yes. Well, I did have a suggestion for perhaps something to start adding, and the Just Push the Dang Button Award.
All right, let's put that one down. I'll add that to the list. Dang button.
Had so many. Like this guy, there was the guy in Naked Time who just needed to push a button. Somebody was, I forget which episode it was, there was somebody else who was just kind of freaked out and they just needed to push a button.
I can't do it, man. Come on. Click. There you go. It's pushed.
Yeah. Every single time, too, Sulu has reached over and just beep.
Wait a moment. Does that mean Sulu's the secret hero of the Enterprise?
Yes, I think Sulu is secretly running the entire ship.
Well, I guess we owe him the universe then, because you know all the times that the Enterprise saves everybody in the long run, it's all Sulu's doing because he kept them alive.
Oh, like we actually hit an hour on this episode, so anyone who's been getting used to our near 2-hour episodes and is like, yay, a long train ride, I kind of apologize. Anyone who's been hating them, I don't know if this is the norm, because this episode had very little going on.
Yeah, there's a lot. I could have gone on at length about, you know, building music, tension, warp 1, warp 2, oh god, we're all gonna die, but that's not really plot points, it's more just sort of flavoring here, so.
Yeah, I mean, everything that happened in this episode, which we talked about in about 30 minutes with jokes and decides, mm-hmm. It's like 15 minutes of stuff with an extra 45 minutes of music and staring.
Yep. Well, I'd argue it makes for, you know, interesting stuff to at least look at, though as far as, you know, keeping things moving, not so much.
It can. The pacing is still a little slow.
Yeah.
For that. And I don't think it's going to get better, because next we're moving into a two-parter.
Oh, yes. The two-parter, the menagerie, where they, you know, picked apart the original pilot and combined it with new footage to make a new thing.
Yes, our first clip show.
Mm-hmm.
Though at least it's clips we haven't seen before, because original pilot. This is the reason we decided not to start with the original pilot, because we'd basically wind up watching it twice.
It is kind of interesting, though, that, you know, I was tempted for next week, you know, to see, you know, it's like, we're going to have a clip show of an episode we've not seen. But I decided to go with something else.
Well, I think they already did that on Community.
Yeah. Gonna have clips of things that haven't happened. What? How's that work?
And just for, you know, anyone who is watching along, we decided it makes absolutely no sense to split up these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can join us here next week for The Menagerie Parts 1 and 2.
Yes, a very special episode, because we're going to have to be watching twice as much Star Trek for it.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a long one.
But I don't know, you know, if there's a lot more dramatic pauses in this one, maybe it'll be shorter.
Oh, that's true. How many dramatic pauses do we get? And how long do we have to talk about what's-her-face in various skimpy outfits?
Yes, I guess it's maybe a good thing I'm not, like, doing a dramatic pause count in any of these. I thought about it, but, like, no, I just have a number that's just too scary. So.
Yeah, that would be the entire episode at a certain point.
Dramatic pause, the episode.
Okay, dramatic pause. You can join us next week for more Watchers of Tomorrow.
Yes, with Gepwin and myself, Dr. Izzix. Next time on Watchers of Tomorrow, Spock is the one who commits all the crimes for once. Or is he?
You have been listening to Watchers of Tomorrow, a podcast on science fiction media. Find and follow Watchers of Tomorrow on Podbean, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Spreader, Digital Podcasts, and perhaps many more to come. If you enjoy our podcast, make sure to subscribe for more. And where possible, make sure to rate your experience or leave us a review. You may find Gepwin on youtube.com/Gepwin and Twitter at Gepwin. You may find me, Dr. Izzix, on youtube.com/Dr. Izzix and Twitter at IzzixLP. Music is Waveform and Mori's Principle, both by DRKRN. You can also check out the Watchers of Tomorrow Discord channel. Make sure to share the experience with your friends, family, enemies, and alien overlords. If you feel you are suffering from transporter syndrome, please be aware that the next time you step off the transporter, that you, that is now, no longer exists.